4:55 on Monday, December 7th. So, we were talking about the final exam. 8 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday. It is optional. It will replace, potentially, one of your other exam scores. So it's worth a replacement of the other exam score, right? It's not more or less. It's just equal to one of those. And, you know, the top three out of the four will be your exam score for the class. For the final project, you know, if you're getting it done sooner than Friday of finals week, that would be appreciated. You know, that's when it's due, is Friday of finals week. But I'm sure that it would be very nice if we could talk it over sooner than that. either with me or with Vic. You know, I just want you to report on what you accomplished in that final project based on what it was that you said you were going to do. And, you know, I'm interested in knowing about your successes as well as your failures in this. It's kind of an experiment to do it this way. I haven't, last semester or last year when we did this class, we only had the three projects. And got kind of late on them, so there wasn't an opportunity to do a fourth one. And this time it seemed like, well, there's this opportunity, so let's see what people are interested in doing. And that's mostly what I want to learn from it. And hopefully that you learn something from it too. that was the other piece of this. So that's the idea. So if you have it done earlier in the week, or even if it's not quite done, it would be very handy if you could come in during finals week and talk it over with me or with Vic. Just tell us what you got. And, you know, if you want to take it all the way till Friday, that's great. But if you can talk with us sooner, that would be appreciated. Phil?
What are the specifications on?
It was to do an interesting networking project. Was it of interest to you? Okay? And of approximately the same scale of the others. That was the idea, so everybody should be able to do something they're really interested in and do well on it. Other questions? I don't have the exams graded yet. We'll get those back on Wednesday. So that's where we're going. Guess what? This projector just failed in its red gun. I hope it makes it through the week. Yeah, well, it has certainly been a joy to have this one rather than one of the old beasts in here this time, so I guess I can't really complain. But we may have there may be things on the slides that are disappearing because there's no red showing. I'll have to fill them in. Okay, so last time before the exam, we talked about principles of cryptography. We talked a little bit about secure email, PGP and GPG approaches to that, and public key infrastructures. This time, we're going to talk about two techniques for sort of making cryptography institutionalized in the systems that we use, in the form of the secure sockets layer for application to application security, and IPsec for host to host or network to network security. So we'll talk about those today. All right, so SSL, secure sockets layer, started when the idea of the web was just getting going. Web browsers were invented about 1991 or 92, and it soon became apparent that people were going to be using these things for things that mattered, transfer of money, buying things, transfer of secure scientific data, and the like. And so the company Netscape, which is the predecessor of Mozilla these days, promulgated this idea of secure sockets layer, which was a general purpose overlay over TCP for doing secure communication. Okay? And it got standardized as something called TLS, Transport Layer Security. I think that was around year 2000, 2001 that happened. But the ideas that are, you know, this is the wonderful thing about the internet, right? That people can sort of start out doing something without any blessing of any organization at all, right? Netscape just says, this is what we're going to do. And we'll put this in the browsers and put this in the servers and we'll have secure communication. And sometime later, the internet community gets around to saying, hey, that was a good idea, let's make a standard out of that. So that's pretty pretty exciting. So the usual guarantees, cryptographic guarantees, confidentiality, integrity, and authentication. One aspect of SSL that is problematic in the world is that the authentication of the client side, the web browser, is even today seldom done. Right? There's usually, you know, you see the little locks down in the, let's see here. What's a secure website? My.wsu.edu. Okay. You see the little lock down in the corner that says we're doing secure communication here. We see the HTTPS that says we're doing secure communication here. The lock actually shows that it's closed, meaning the certificates were okay and all that. But this is just a representation that the server has been properly authenticated to the web browser client. The client, the server has no idea who I am at this point, right? And so we overlay some sort of sign-in mechanism with this, but there's just in general not much use of the client authentication piece of SSL, you know, which would mean that I had a certificate on my computer that said it was me, right? And could demonstrate that it really was me by appropriately encrypting things and the like. Lost my place. This one. Okay, so client authentication is optional. I guess that's been, on the other hand, a good thing because, of course, certainly back in 1993, you would have hardly been able to get started with this whole thing had it been necessary for every client to go out and get a certificate of some kind in order to use it. The server owners were very interested in making sure that clients knew, you know, when you went to a banking site, that it really was the banking site and not somebody else. But they recognized that they couldn't really force that out into the world, into all the clients. Okay. So, available to all TCP applications. Well, kinda. The application has to interact with networking through the secure socket library and not directly through the standard socket library. Okay, so there's a programming interface, a set of libraries, lots of well, at least a handful of different implementations of this. The application uses that. The SSL libraries live typically in user space. Remember that the regular socket interface was a kernel interface, interaction with the operating system, and TCP really lives in there. Here we have a set of libraries that are happening at the client layer. Sorry, at the in user space layer. This was the diagram we did before about how to do secure and authenticated mail. The difference, this is really a lot of gobbledygook for saying what they want to say. The difference was that in SSL, we have to actually incorporate the exchange of certificates as part of the protocol. Whereas in the secure mail stuff, we are sort of assuming that the certificate has been already sent by some other method, and there's a library of certificates or a folder of certificates that you refer to while doing mail. With SSL, we want to incorporate that whole idea of certificate exchange directly into the protocols. So what that means is what they call this handshake phase, that we start out by doing the certificate part before we get around to ever doing the data exchange part. Okay. So the way this material gets presented here is that they develop what they call a toy secure socket layer protocol. It isn't the real one. It just has the key ideas in it, and then talk about the differences with the real one, what's been left out of the toy one. So we go through a handshake phase, a key derivation phase, talk about why that's needed. Finally, we get to doing data transfer, and there are some issues about closing connections securely, turns out. You might think that closing connections is a safe thing to do, but no, you can even cause security problems by prematurely closing a connection. So you need to do it securely. Okay. So how's it go? Alice says hello to Bob. Bob sends back a certificate. Notice that those are unencrypted. Right? So it isn't a secret that Bob and Alice are communicating. In Bob's certificate, Alice finds Bob's public key. She picks what's called the master secret and sends it to Bob as an encrypted string. Right? So now Alice and Bob share the master secret. And they shared it by using public key cryptography. Okay. Now, why not just keep using the master secret as the key, as the session key? Right? We remember the question on the exam about that was getting at session keys. So here's a session key. It says this is a key that's good for Bob and Alice to use for this conversation, but it turns out that cryptographic lore, and probably there's some truth to this, but you have to be a cryptographer to really know, says that it's bad to use a single key for lots of different operations. So if you're signing, you should be using a different key than you're using to encrypt with for secrecy. Okay? So given that, what we have to do is take this master key and derive the keys for other purposes. So we're going to send data from the client to the server using one key. We're going to send data in the opposite direction with a different key, and we're going to have MAC keys for the authentication part as well. Okay, so what's called a key derivation function that is used to take the master secret, you combine it with some additional random data, and then you communicate these keys back and forth across the channel during this handshake so that everybody ends up having the right information, okay, that they need to do the decryption, the encryption they need to do. Okay. So now the next thing to think about is that think about what a particularly a web session with keep-alives, with connection keep-alive, is going to be. Right? It's a request from the client to the server, followed by a response back from the server, followed by another request and another response, and so on and so forth. Okay? And keep alive is what we want because that's what's efficient. So, what you can't do is say, I'm going to encrypt this entire stream and then authenticate the whole thing. Because the whole stream is a bunch of different interactions. And so the server, when it gets that first request, it wants to authenticate that first request. With me? So, this is at odds with TCP's view of the world, right? TCP's view of the world is that I send a stream of bytes with no boundaries. And at the application layer, if I want boundaries, I put boundaries in. Right? Well, now at SSL, in order to do the functions that SSL has to do, namely encryption and authentication, we need to have boundaries below the application in SSL. Okay? So, the idea is SSL, as part of the programming interface, already has the idea of records in it. And it will be the records that get authentication codes associated with them. We've talked about how to do this at the application layer. It's not any different doing it at the SSL layer. We have variable length records. There's rules in the SSL protocol that say when we send a record, we send its length and we send the data and then we send the message authentication code for it. And that's what constitutes a record at the SSL layer. Okay, next thing. As usual, when talking about cryptographic stuff, we worry about attackers who can replay records, right? Because remember the example of transfer $1 million, right? We don't want to have people causing things to happen over again in the real world. So we need to have sequence numbers as part of SSL so that applications are insured that they don't ever get replayed messages. And the final thing is, what if the attacker could replay records, replay all of the records? Well, the handshake has to handle that by ensuring that when Bob and Alice start up the conversation, there's something there that requires each of them to respond to something that's new as of the start of the conversation. And that such a thing is called a nonce. A bit of data that's fresh, at the point when somebody sends it and then somebody else has to respond to it, it's fresh. It couldn't have responded, couldn't come from anything that happened before that. Okay, final thing is we don't want to let things close prematurely. So we include a type that says more data or no more data. I guess it says type one, says no more data. Now the connection should be allowed to close. So a conversation goes pretty much as expected. There are type zero records up to the point where we get to the end, finally send to type one. Get them in order, do close-up. Nothing terribly exciting. Okay, so this isn't a full description of real SSL. The full description of real SSL is a few tens of pages long in terms of what are all the fields, what are all the rules. And the reason it gets so complicated is because there's a lot of choices that can be made in any given conversation as to which encryption protocols are going to be used. So, let's see what we got here. So part of the problem is there are so many choices. Right. And that's important. Having choices is important so that the protocol can evolve over time. We wouldn't want to be locked into a particular set of encryption protocols as part of the standard, because what happens if one of those protocols gets broken? Then your whole standard is broken. So the standard is forward-looking in saying we're going to have many different encryption protocols available over time. And even initially. So one of the things that has to happen when we start up and do this handshake at the beginning is we have to figure out what protocols the client and the server have in common and agree on one. So like in SIP, remember when we talked about SIP, different audio encoding protocols, same idea. The client will typically say, I would really like to use this one most, but if you can't use that one, then let's use this one, and if you can't use that one, let's use this one, and the server will pick whichever of those is highest on the list, that priorities list, and say, yeah, this is what we'll do. So kinds of things that are available as symmetric ciphers, DES, triple DES, the RC2 and RC4 ciphers. Okay, so you know, any of these you're going to find library implementations of, and they can be compiled and linked with your SSL library so that your SSL library is very capable to do different kinds of encryption. I guess RSA is the main one. That's been around a long time for public key. These days, there's also something called elliptic curve cryptography. That's kind of, think people are thinking, is pretty interesting. I don't know about its status with respect to SSL. So what do you have to choose? You specifically have to choose for a particular connection the public key algorithm, the symmetric key encryption algorithm, and the MAC algorithm. They make up what's called a cipher suite. You got to pick one, right? And that's what we have to do. So this is just a quick refresh of the Same thing that we saw in the toy SSL. The server authenticates using its certificate. We agree on the crypto algorithms, establish the cipher suite, and potentially authenticate the clients. Yes, there is one interesting thing about this handshake. Notice that we start out, just as in the toy algorithm, we start out in a situation where we have no cryptography available. Okay? The client sort of says, I want to talk to you, and the server comes back and says, yes, I'll talk to you, and here's how we're going to do it. And some of that happens using in the clear messaging. Not secret, not authenticated. So that can be attacked by a man-in-the-middle attack, where somebody sort of gets in there at that early stage and intercepts some of those messages and maybe alters some of them. So they did something really clever. By the time you're done with the handshake, you've got an encrypted session going where the client and the server both know who each other are, and it's impervious to man-in-the-middle stuff at that point. So when you get to the very end, the client and the server exchange authentication messages for the stuff that was done earlier without them. I thought that was pretty clever. And of course, you have to argue that the client and the server really do know who each other are at that point, and that a man in the middle can't sort of corrupt this step. But I think it's a pretty clever idea to authenticate something after the fact. Okay, so that's pretty cute. This slide again describes nonces. You may want to take a look at that. What just happened? I guess this is, I really don't think it's worth going into all of this detail about this. I want to move on to IPsec. You can read about this in the book, but it's pretty straightforward. I don't see anything here that's particularly clever. You have too much data to fit in a SSL record. You have to split it between records. Right? You encrypted it. Well, you have to put a record header on it. Fine. It's pretty straightforward at this point. We said we had to get keys. I think just in an introductory course, this isn't really necessary that you know. Okay, so we're going to say let's not worry about it. Know that it has to be done, but knowing the details is not what we need here. So SSL lets us have application to application security. We have a client application, we have a server application, the encryption stuff sits above TCP. There's a role in the world for network security at the network layer, that is between hosts or even between networks, and that's the role of the IP security standard, IPsec. Okay, now. Unfortunately, it doesn't share a lot of terminology with the SSL world, although a lot of the concepts are going to be similar, but it evolved independently. And they, the two are not really interchangeable. You know, it's a different thing to be authenticating an application versus authenticating a host. So the cool thing about IPsec is that you can encrypt and authenticate anything that can be in an IP packet. And it's not restricted to streams. But as I say, you don't authenticate the application in that case, because by the time the data gets to the application, all of this has disappeared. So the uses for this are usually things that are related to either hosts or networks. So one of the uses that is very popular, and you may have even experienced, is for laptops that wander around, and you want to get back on your home network, you can set up a what's called a virtual private network between your laptop and, say, a router back at your home network using IPsec. And then your laptop will appear as if it's on that home network. Okay? And but the traffic to it will be encrypted and authenticated. Similarly, the VPNs are used between different locations of companies, right? And again, it's kind of a router to router. In that case, it's kind of a router to router thing. So let's see. What's to say here? Pictures of the same thing. All right. So what do we want to do? Provide integrity, authentication, prevent replays, and ensure confidentiality of data. Part of the reason IPsec gets complicated is that it, again, has lots of choices that you make in using it. One dimension of choice is the choice between what's called authentication header and what's called encapsulation security protocol. One of them just provides authentication, the other provides confidentiality. And they go by these very geeky names, which is part of the reason it's hard to, you know, unless you really get into it, it's hard to keep track of what IPsec does for you, but AH is authentication and ESP is encryption. Another dimension of IPsec is whether the service it's providing is between two end hosts or between two routers, or an end host and a router, and it comes in all these flavors. So transport mode is implemented between the end hosts. Okay? And so everything that you do on that end host is potentially carried over a secure, over an encrypted and authenticated connection. So it protects everything when you do that. The other mode is tunneling mode, and in that case, the end hosts don't participate in IPsec at all, right? They just do ordinary IP. When their packets hit the routers and need to go to the other routers, then they get encrypted and authenticated. So it's, again, a pretty weak guarantee from the perspective of the end application, but the network administrator is pretty happy, because essentially what he gets from it is is a network that connects remote locations that's just as good as his local network in terms of security, which may not be that good, but you know. I didn't understand that slide when I first saw it. I don't understand it now. Okay. So we have AH and ESP. Not a lot of use of AH because I think encryption has gotten fast enough that people don't want to mess with not having it. It's sort of a no-brainer to say, yeah, let's just go ahead and make it confidential as well as authenticated. That's when you start out. And then as you sort of get into the process of setting one of these things up, you find out about all the gotchas, about things you have to agree on to set one of these up, and you may wish you'd made the other decision, but We've done some of this in our lab with some remote locations, and you get a Linux implementation and a Cisco implementation and a Microsoft implementation all involved at the same time. And it turns out to be weeks of negotiation. It's not a lot of work. It's just that, you know, you have to get the guy at the other end on a day when he's there and not busy to be willing to do an experiment with you. This has not been easy. So we live mostly here. The world seems to be living mostly in the tunnel mode using ESP. But host mode is also important for, like I said, for laptops. So, now the terminology associated with IPsec. You have a sending entity and a receiving entity. And so, you know, typically you'd have two entities, and they would each play both roles, right? So if we have two routers that are connecting together two networks, for traffic going in one direction, one's a sender, the other's a receiver, and vice versa, okay? But in IPsec does not treat this situation symmetrically. They say traffic in each direction is handled separately, and the data state associated with that is called a security association, or SA. Okay? That means that IPsec is connection oriented. Right? You have to set up this SA before you can do IPsec. So over the IPsec connection, we will send IP traffic, which is connectionless, but the point-to-point association, the point-to-point situation is an association which is connection-oriented. And we need to have one of those for each participant. We need to have two of those for each participant. So here's an example. Doing a VPN between headquarters and a branch office, and then also setting up N traveling salespersons. Branch offices, headquarters and branch office, will have a security association in each direction. A security association associates an IP address or has associated IP addresses for both ends, as well as the information about what kind of encryption to use. So again, we have the notion of we've got to choose all the different encryption algorithms, right? But now we don't call it an encryption suite. We call it part of a security association. Oh, well. Okay. So the way this goes is that to make use of IPsec, you have to develop what's called a security association database. Now, database conveys a notion that this is a big heavyweight thing sitting out on disk. No, this is just a table. Okay, sort of like a routing table. And whenever there's a communication that's going between the two associated IP addresses, the host or router, whatever it is, has to say, do I have a security association for those two IP addresses? And if so, let's do the thing that security association says to do for those communications. So with all that said, in our example, we need 2 plus 2n security associations, two for the traffic in both directions from the branch office, and 2n for traffic in both directions with each of the mobile laptops. Okay? So when you're sending data, you have to look up in the SAD to see what I'm supposed to do with it. When you receive data that says I'm encrypted data, you get information out of the incoming packet and use that to look in the SAD to say, how do I handle this incoming packet? Okay, so in tunnel mode with ESP, somehow they got into talking about the whole enchilada here. So there are enchiladas in this description. What do we got? We've got an incoming IP packet. It's got an IP header. Well, I guess this is for sending. We've got an IP header. We've got unencrypted stuff associated with ESP, and we've got authentication stuff that's associated with the whole thing. So to do the encryption part, the ESP part, we start with, remember, this is an IP datagram. We're doing tunneling here. So this thing already has on it an IP header and a transport header and, of course, all that stuff. It's a complete IP datagram. We have to add some information about what's here in this packet. And we have to add the information that's needed to do the lookup in the SAD, which is done. So we do SPIs, security parameter indexes, I think, which is just an index in that table of essays. Okay, so we add the trailer, encrypt the result, put the ESP header on the front. I see. Creating the enchilada. All right, never mind. All right. So the real point is that IPsec itself is building this piece, and then you hand it to the next lower layer, the IP layer. And it again puts a new IP header on. Notice, I think it's important to notice here that because this operates at the IP layer now, it's something that has to be implemented in typically the operating system of the host or the router. It's no longer an application level thing. You have to have access to that original IP header. That's not something that applications ever see using the socket layer, using the socket interface. So this is something that you configure into your operating system implementation rather than something you incorporate into your applications. And that goes along with this idea of this is a host-to-host protocol rather than application-to-application. Okay. So same old stuff. The sequence numbers to prevent replay attacks. And that means that, again, that that IPsec becomes stateful rather than stateless, because the receiver has to keep track of what it's already seen if it's to prevent getting duplicates. Okay. Security policy database, again, just a table, not an Oracle database. I've got a packet that I'm supposed to send. What SA should I use for it? That's the role of the SPD. So, next time. We'll save this for next time. Any questions about this? I've just sort of rambled on with great silence. I felt great silence in the room today. Although, also attention. So, nobody's sleeping, which is good. So, any questions? All right. So, get the exams back on Wednesday. See you then. Hi.
When are you going to grade all of our final grades?
Pardon?
When do you evaluate all final grades?
Final grades are done on the Tuesday after finals week.
So how do we know if we have to take final or not?
Okay. So when you get back your exam on Wednesday, you will know what your exam grades have been, and you can decide whether you want to take the final or not.
Okay.
Okay.